Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another episode of Man Buns and Jesus, the show where two, degens talk about Jesus while wearing man buns. Because, that's our style. Speaking of style, Josh, you don't happen to have any gold on you, do you?
I do, okay. Actually. For anyone not watching, my jersey has gold on it. Not real gold, just the color gold.
So we can melt that down to create a very, very small golden calf.
You mean you can melt this down to be melted polyester?
Fair. I'm sure that'll spell great. That's what we're going to talk about today, though, after the theme song.
That was a cue for me to do the theme song, but I got distracted by a text about our new theme song that should be coming soon. It's that time! The cow makes me smile every time.
It's also appropriate for today.
That it is. Why would that be appropriate for today, Ben?
Well, see, we're talking about the golden calf. Hence the terrible cold open that you just endured. Today, our purpose is really digging into, like, looking at how easy it is for us as Christians to slip, even, like, when God is painfully obvious in our lives. Just like as Moses is on top of Mount Sinai receiving the law from God directly, this is when the Israelites decide this is a great opportunity to make an idol out of all of the gold that we had from the Egyptians. Yeah, we see the presence of God swirling around a mountain. We kind of think it might have accidentally killed Moses, but like, golden calf, baby.
Which is crazy to me. They're looking at it and they're thinking, we think God might have killed Moses. Yeah, let's worship something else. Like, that is, what? The logical consistency is not there for me.
It's almost like really early American consumerism. I don't like this one anymore. Let's move on to the next one.
That's true. Yeah. I was wondering what your connection there was. People buying new iPhones. That's what your connection was.
Exactly.
Ooh, the idolatry of your phone.
Yeah. We need a new operating system. We gotta upgrade.
So this comes out of Exodus 32. And you can read it. We're not going to read it for you because, frankly, it's long.
But we will give you the nice juicy summary.
Which is basically, the Israelites, remember, they've left Egypt. They've had this experience with the Red Sea. They've seen all of these incredible things that God does. And they arrive at Mount Sinai. And Moses goes up. And initially, he goes up with the elders of the people. And they have this experience with God. And then he's there and he is, like Ben said, he's receiving the law. And this is how 32 starts. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, they gathered themselves together to Aaron, who is Moses' brother, kind of his second, and said to him, "Make gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him." So Aaron tells him, take a lot of the gold you have, we'll melt it down. He makes it into a calf, like a cow, a baby cow. And then they worship it. God is not happy about this. And he is about to just strike them all down. And Moses says, well, hold on. If you strike them all down, What are people going to say about you? You know, you brought these people out of Egypt just to go kill them in the desert. Like, what? So God relents. I mean, the people are still punished, but they're not wholesale wiped out. So, mercy. Maybe not what we would call mercy, but still mercy. And that's in a nutshell, the story of the golden calf.
Yeah. It's just, like, reading it, especially from our modern perspective and perhaps the rose-colored glasses we wear while looking at ourselves, we look at this text and go, how in the world could you be such big idiots? Like, you absolute dolts. God is in his presence.
Right, like, there.
Yeah.
Like, you can see this going on.
Yeah. You know he's there anyway, even if the big swirling cloud around the top of the mountain wasn't there. But the big frightening swirling cloud around the top of the mountain is there. And you still think it wise to challenge the big swirling cloud around the top of the mountain. Like, why?
But before we judge too quickly,
I mean,
how many people go from an experience on Sunday morning, as close as we get to a face-to-face encounter with God, where you are in his word, receiving his sacraments, and then you turn around and your next stop is pick your idol.
Yeah.
Right. Where you go to worship your football team or your hockey team, or you go immediately to the mall to buy stuff and make materialism your idol, or even whatever else you spend the rest of the day doing. How quick are we to say, okay, the God stuff is over. Let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay for us to say, like, how could you miss it? The big swirling mass in front of you. I think that's fair. But at the same time, I don't know how different we are.
Well, I'm completely with you there. And that's where the rose-colored glasses that we wear to look at ourselves come in. Like, our experiences look a little different. They may not have the big swirling clouds around the mountain, but, like,
like our idols look a little different.
Exactly. Most we don't necessarily fashion cows out of gold or polyester. Yeah, it smells terrible. But, like, we do fashion our own idols out of the patterns that we form ourselves into. And it's worth noting how God responds to this. Like, end of chapter 32, as God is telling Moses what to do in the wake of this, it's basically, go kill a bunch of fools. I think I lost you there, Josh.
You did. It claimed I had no internet connection. That's not true.
I now have two Josh faces on my screen.
Well, I'm the one that matters.
The frozen one from before and the other one.
I am fascinated to see what the final product looks like. Because what this platform does is, it doesn't record this. It records your stream on your machine. It records my stream on my machine and puts them together. I don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah, we'll find out. That was my computer doing some things. Don't worry about it.
It's telling me to make sure I have a stable internet connection. I have... What?
Mine's giving me the same thing.
Oh, it's gone now. Maybe I'm safe. It does say there's now one in the audience. I'm guessing that is the other me. Oh, it's the other Ben. Now, yep. I have two Bens.
This will be a fascinating recording when it comes out. Anyway, so the point that I was getting at is, like, God's response to the very immediate and abrupt rebellion of his people is, let's kill the fools that turned away.
This was what I was about to say before I got cut out. Isn't this the one where he tells, like, Aaron and some of the priests to just, like, walk through in a straight line, whacking people with their swords? Or is that a different punishment? I suppose I could read it for myself.
Nope.
Oh, no, this one's just a plague. Just a regular old plague. No big deal.
This one is put your sword out on your side to each of you. Go to and fro from the gate to gate through the camp, and each of you kill his brother and his companion and his neighbor. And they kill 3,000 men.
That was the right one then.
Yep. And then
there's a plague at the very end.
No, it's not a plague.
Then the Lord sent a plague on the people because they made the calf.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But is that before or after they grind up the calf and then put it in the drinking water?
After?
I think after. Yep. He took the calf that they had made, burned it with fire, ground it to a powder, and scattered it on the water and made the people of Israel drink it. I like this as a method of church discipline. Take your idol, grind it up, put it in the drinking water, kill a bunch of people, and then... send a plague.
And then send a plague, just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case anyone thought you weren't serious with, you know.
Yeah.
The priests swinging swords.
There'd be a lot of people with, like, powdered cell phone or... a combination of steel and rubber from golf clubs, or
actually, this might be an appropriate place because if we continue this list of grinding things up, it could get gruesome. But I want to play a little game to lead into a conversation.
Okay.
Because I think it's worth talking about, what do idols look like today? Because most of us do not worship statues of golden cows. Or
there is a Hindu temple not far from my house where they list the idols that they worship there.
Well, there you go. But there are idols today. And I want to start by saying, Ben, if you ask a Bible study, what are idols today? What are the three answers they're going to give you right off the bat?
Wine, women, and song?
What?
Wine, women, and song?
That's not what I was going for, but sort of parallel. I feel like every time I ask that question, I get like the same three answers.
I mean, the answers that I would give are sex, money, and power.
This game isn't going how I foresaw it, although those are pretty obvious answers. It's always power, money and power are always there. And then the third one tends to be some sort of popularity. It's like a popularity or something along those lines. Sometimes the distinction's made by materialism, but I think we love to say all of these. So we listed, what, 6 and then 9, if you want to count Wine, Woman, and Song. I think we, when we're talking about idols of the day, I think that we like to use those because they're general enough that you are not immediately convicted of having an idol.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
Whereas they're accurate, right? I think it's fair. I think if we narrow them down a little bit more, I think it is harder for us to contend with, but I think it is ultimately more productive for us, because then we can actually identify these are idols in our lives and we need to deal with that, right? So what I would like to direct us is what, getting specific, what are some of these idols? And I want to kick us off because I think a lot of them are unexpected, right? Luther talked about an idol as, or a god as something that you fear, love, and trust above all else, which I think is a helpful definition when we're looking, well, what are our idols? And a lot of times, I think an idol can be a good gift of God that we elevate beyond where it should be.
Yep.
And one I've seen less out here, but I think this was a big one in the Midwest where I saw, was family.
Yeah.
Especially parents idolizing their kids. In that, they love their kids more than anything else in the world. Which, you say that and you're like, that sounds good. Can't love your kids more than God. He's more important. And I think their greatest fear was their kids not ending up, like, not fulfilling whatever image they had for their kids, whether that was success or health or whatever. And that plays out in the field of education. Because if I've heard this complaint from a lot of teachers where you'll get parents who come in when their kid messed up and they blame the teacher because my darling child would never do anything wrong. That is a byproduct of idolizing your child. And where this comes to play is when you start skipping church because you don't want your kid to miss a practice or a game. Where your kid wants to go do something, so you skip church. Or your own devotional life suffers, your own, you know, maybe you don't go to Bible study because you want to make sure you can take your kid to every single sport or activity they want to go to.
Or even just like the, I'm not going to take my kid to church because I don't think my kid likes it.
I think
that's more than anything. That to me is the biggest one that really grinds my gears. Like some of the sports stuff, if you look hard enough, you can find a church that has a Saturday night service or a Wednesday evening service.
Yeah,
You can work around it. And the way that sports leagues are scheduled these days, it sucks, but a lot of them schedule on Sunday mornings. I get it. The part that bugs me more is when the attitude is, my kids don't like it, so I'm not going to come. They're your kids. You have some level of authority over them. If you think this is good for them, bring them anyway.
And it is good for them. Now, it's also one of those things like, oh, my kids won't behave in church. Where do you think they're going to learn how to behave in church? They're not just going to magically wake up one day and behave in church.
And I don't know about you, Josh, but
teach them how to behave in church.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, Josh, but like the kids that are like a little bit vocal in church oftentimes make the sermons way more interesting.
Oh,
yeah. They pick up on those random cues in the middle of the sermon where you're talking about something interesting and then you'll get some, like, absolutely goofy question. I remember hearing from one parent, I think I kind of heard this in a sermon. I called somebody stupid in a sermon. It was a dumb act from somebody in scripture. But I called them stupid, and the family in question, they're trying to teach their kids not to use that word in reference to other people, which not a bad habit.
Yeah, fair.
And so the kid turns to dad and says, "Pastor said a bad word." Middle of the service, just loud enough that I think I heard it from the front. There were some snickers throughout the congregation, but like, those moments bring me more joy than they ever should bring a parent embarrassment. Like, that's awesome. Your kid's paying attention to the sermon. That, I love that.
I'm gonna be honest, if that specific thing happened, I would have to pause, because in my head, there would be two voices warring. One would be to say, to speak out, "Sorry, you're right. Probably shouldn't have said that." The other voice, the intrusive voice, would say, "Oh, you thought that was bad. Buckle up."
If you can't tell, Josh and I are not saints. But like the point being, like, yeah, family can be a hindrance and an idol in our faith that distracts us from our faith.
And again, family is a good gift from God.
Yeah. Just make sure that it
can't be more important than God.
Yeah. Make sure it's in the right place in creation. I'm going to come up with one that I think is even more convoluted.
Ooh, I love it. Twisty.
But perhaps spicier. Church.
Ooh, yeah.
Church can be an idol.
You're going to have to explain that for the folks.
Yeah. So how can church be an idol?
Small C church, not big C church, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, this is, for those of you who are... This is
your church.
Yeah. If you're a member of Good Shepherd or Edgewater, this is making Good Shepherd or Edgewater or whatever other church you're listening from. What's your brother's church?
Oh, goodness. Cross and Crown. Cross and Crown.
There you go.
That's Cross and Crown in Tucson, Arizona. I think we have listeners from St. Paul in Boca Raton. We have listeners from Mount Calvary in Warner Robins.
Crown of Life in Rochester Hills. I think there might be some folks from Journey in Oxford. Unsure. But, yeah.
Anyway, the church, you would say, this is my church.
Yes.
That's what Ben's talking about.
The way you can make this an idol is if you start to care more about the health of your church than you care about following God.
Ooh, can I give an example?
You can. Go ahead. I had a couple lined up, but I'll let you go first since you seem excited to share yours.
Well, because I was thinking about this as I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and this came up. I think one of the places this becomes most obvious is in how people respond to their pastor taking a call to another church.
Mm.
Because if our priority is the church, the big C church, all believers everywhere,
mm-hmm.
then our response to a pastor taking a call should be, God is moving him to another place where he is going to serve God's people.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see a little bit of idolatry of a church is where the response is anger that how could he leave my church?
Mm-hmm.
Because what that is communicating is my church is more important than the other church that this pastor would be moving to serve. And this came up in a conversation. Someone was very upset that their pastor had left. And it was years ago, but it was still like, they were still holding that grudge kind of, and that's I think that looks like an idolization either of your church or maybe even of that pastor.
Yeah. I mean, my grandma, her favorite pastor took a call away from the church that she was working at. This was in the 80s, maybe early 90s. It's been a while. And
before either of us were born.
Yeah, before either of us were born. And to this day, it's a little bit sarcastic at this. It's mostly sarcastic at this point. But she will incorrectly pronounce the name of the town that the pastor was called to out of spite. Mostly out of sarcasm at this point. But
I was about to say, that sounds kind of just like a lighthearted.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
Initially, she was really frustrated. She really liked the pastor and was annoyed that he was leaving. But at this point, I think
it's okay to feel some emotions. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful how far you take that, I think.
Yeah.
I think making fun of the town name that he's moving to, I feel like that's in bounds. You can do that. That's allowed.
Anyway, that's a great example of making church an idol. But I think, like, there's kind of a flip side of this, too, where you make church an idol by, like, wholeheartedly investing in the health of your church rather than investing in your faith. So, like, an example might be you are an all-out volunteer for your church. You are there 24/7, doing whatever needs to be done. But because you want to see your church survive and you feel like that's what you need to do to make that happen, you're not necessarily there to serve God. You're there to serve your own comfort.
And there becomes a question of motivation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So, like, it's a weird one, but it's one that I see a lot in the Christian community because...
Well, and I think there's some of... Another way that can manifest is putting down other churches.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, if the church is proclaiming the gospel, and if Jesus Christ is being found there, it should be an attitude of, we are teammates. Now, teammates sometimes can recognize places where each other can grow, which is fair.
Yeah.
But this idea that you would put down other churches because it's not your church, that's not appropriate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, those of you who are sports fans, think about it this way. If you are listening to a radio broadcast or something, or reading a sports article about your favorite team, you don't necessarily want to see a quote in the paper or hear a quote on the radio about something like with one of the best players on your team speaking openly about the deficiencies of another player on the team.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
That's like, that turns most fans off right away, and often creates very obvious friction within the team.
Yeah. The team does not get better after those comments get made.
Yes. Super recent example.
That is why the Predators got rid of PK Subban.
That's why the Buffalo Bills just traded Stephon Diggs.
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah. Like, after the Vikings did the same thing. 2 or 3 years ago.
There's a YouTube channel called OG Lightskins who has a couple hilarious videos on the Stephon Diggs trade. If anyone's going to look that up, he uses language we would not use on this podcast.
He does not pick his words wisely.
And he uses the N-word a whole lot.
Anyway.
Anywho. Good luck in Texas, Stephon Diggs.
If there's a conflict between two players on your favorite sports team, you hope that they settle that by coming together and, like, working through that behind closed doors so that as a team they remain unified. And you can't just pick on, like that relationship or that part of the team. Another example, and this one maybe plays a little bit more into how churches work. Last year, the Minnesota Timberwolves had a player named D'Angelo Russell. They traded him halfway through the year because he refused to pass the ball to our center, Rudy Gobert, because he, in part, didn't trust him and didn't know how to play with him. And there were open quotes about Gobert having brick hands, and like it was pretty nasty. And like, as a church, as the church, capital C church, when we speak about other congregations, I think honestly within our denomination or otherwise, without putting it in a frame of either we're speaking this way to inform, rebuke, correct, train, or we're speaking this way to, help them discern and see themselves. We're just bashing on the church as a whole. And it's viewed very similarly to the outside world as, you know, two players on the same sports team going at each other. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. I think in a similar vein, idolizing your church. And this is a weird one. This is a nuanced one. But idolizing, how do I put this? Idolizing your own spiritual growth.
Mm.
And by that I mean kind of it almost like an ivory tower.
Mm.
Like, I'm doing my Bible study, I'm doing my readings, and I'm not gonna skip that for anything or anyone, even if that anything or anyone would be another way to serve God. It's another thing where is the most important, is the thing that you love and trust above all else, God, or the devotions that you're doing about him?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It would be like something, like if, here's an example. If it's a young couple and the wife is pregnant and she goes into labor on Sunday morning and the husband's like, "You're on your own, I gotta go to church." No, you're failing how God has called you to be a husband because you're so concerned with your piety. That would be kind of an example.
I call this compulsive Twitter theology expert disease.
That's a very long disease name. You should switch it into Latin because then it'll sound official.
I'm going to look that up.
Hold on. I want you to explain what you mean by that because I don't know
that's an attitude you see a lot online. And especially in social media, where like people feel so strongly about their need to like be seen as an expert, to be seen as knowledgeable and influential in their faith or in their congregation, in their denomination, whatever the case may be, that their piety seems to be more important than other aspects of their faith and life.
Yeah.
To the point where they almost don't seem human. They just seem like empty, like vacuous brained robots. Just spouting the same five things over and over and over again. And it shows up in so many weird ways too. Like, it'll show up in conversations about what the best, you know, types of worship are. It'll show up in the best or in like conversations about denominational differences. It'll show up in conversations about
theology. Yeah.
Or like, is this conversion legit? Is this podcast out of line? It's
probably, if you're listening to this one, probably.
I mean, sure. We We are sinners. But like, the whole thing just gets to be way too much. And unnecessarily so. And I think it comes back to the, like, people are more focused on their spiritual growth or their piety, however you want to phrase it, than they are actually loving and serving God with an open heart and an open mind.
Which is something, if you look at Paul's epistles in the New Testament, he doesn't talk about individual spiritual growth. That's never his focus. It's always, how are we growing together?
Yeah.
Are we being formed as a community of believers?
Yeah.
Do not hear us wrong. Like, we're not saying that personal devotion, that reading your Bible, that those things are bad. It is just when the action, when the thing you are doing becomes more important than the God you're doing it for, you have made an idol out of something that should have been incredibly good.
I mean, remember the Luther quote, God does not need your good works, but your neighbor does. So, like, when you are reading your Bible and studying scripture, you're not doing it for God and maybe not even for yourself. You're doing it so that when your neighbor asks you about your faith, you can speak to it intelligently.
Yeah.
If that's not your motivation for Bible study, then take some time.
I got to be honest. I had never thought about it like that. I like that thought, though.
You're welcome, Josh.
You rock, Ben. Thanks, dude.
Dropping wisdom bombs. One more, and then maybe we can start moving towards takeaways. One more that is, you know, so incredibly prevalent in our world and time, and shows up in some really unique and kind of terrifying ways is individualism, like making ourselves an idol. And
we move back to the nice, simple ones. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, anything, but like, it can be anything from you genuinely just want to have a better reputation and a better, like you want to look better in whatever way that means to you, whether that's physically or financially or status-wise, or you just like having 15 degree abbreviations after your last name.
Which is too many.
Yes, it is. Like, that's one way that can play out. And it's a painful way that it plays out. But at the same time, like, it could be on the opposite end of things where it's like, you just indulge yourself in whatever you want to do. Like, if you're tempted to do something, you just say yes every single time.
Your opinion is the only one that matters. If someone disagrees with you, you're wrong. They're wrong.
Yep. I mean,
which is probably a more flagrant instance of this. Especially if you say it out loud, then it's like,
yeah,
you're dedicated to it.
Yeah. And there's so many different ways that can rise too. Like, it could be born out of a place of feeling like you know better. You know, maybe it's born out of a sense of intelligence, or self-worth. If it's something like that, maybe it's born out of a place of desperation. If it's something like you're trying to make yourself an idol by, you know, building yourself up. I'll throw Josh under the bus here a little bit. The hashtag gym bro lifestyle can very easily become an idol. If your focus in life, the thing you fear, love, and trust the most in the world is gains. Like,
which, if you're like, no one could idolize that, you are very wrong.
Yeah.
Just for context, for anyone who you see like them posting pictures online with their six pack and their like biceps that are 19 inches around, okay, that's not a I work out every day. That's a I work out multiple times a day, and my lifestyle, my diet, everything is revolving around making sure I maintain this physique. To maintain a physique like, and I'm not talking about skinny guys who have a six pack, I'm talking about lifters who have, you can see every muscle that they have. That's not a casual thing. That is a, pretty much everything in your life is dedicated to maintaining that physique.
Mm-hmm.
Physique has become an idol. A particularly draining one too.
Yeah.
Because the supplements and everything, those are not cheap.
Yeah. They are sacrificing and melting down a lot of their coin to get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many different ways we can go about this.
Because I mean, in the same way, people who they do everything to look the right way, right? They spend more than they need to on their car and on their clothes, and they make sure they have the right brands and they live in the right part of town. And like everything is about that image. And I mean, you have the same thing the other way. People who are so concerned with not looking like they're trying that they spend all their time, all their money agonizing over more nondescript decisions about how they look. You know, those people who don't care about their appearance, but they very much care about how they look.
Yeah. It always cracks me up watching. So in hockey, there is a deep obsession with hair.
The flow.
And it cracks me up so often.
Ferda. For anyone who's listening, I unleashed my flow and my man bun, which doesn't look great because I showered this morning, so it's like wet and not. Continue, Ben. I'm just going to adjust my hair in the video.
Anyway, there's this deep obsession with hair even though they spend most of the game with it solidly sandwiched under their helmet and invisible to the world.
I will say, some of them, when they unleash it, when they take their helmets off, it's like, that is a majestic flow you have going there.
Yeah, but like, some of those guys will spend hours on hair only to put it under a helmet.
There's some soccer players who have a barber on retainer who travels with them to give them a fresh haircut every single match day.
There's an annual video put out called the Minnesota State All-Hockey Hair Team, or All-State Hockey Hair Team. It's a master class of...
What an honor.
...hockey hair. It's from the boys' high school state championship game, or championships. And it's just like... perms and blowouts and like... interesting patterns shaved into the sides of heads and into eyebrows and like beards that are manicured and bleached and like so much blonde hair. It's frightening. Like that to me is peak. Yeah. I care how I look individualism.
And it isn't just how you look. We've spent a fair bit of time. It's any number of things. Ben mentioned the whole degree thing. There are so many different ways we make everything about us. And I think this is probably one of America's favorite vices because we are so individualistic.
Yeah. And I mean, this one can bleed into everything else we've talked about today.
Oh yeah, you look at church and people serve, but they serve in visual roles, so it's all about how I'm serving.
Yeah,
or they serve in such a way that I'm leading, how I'm stepping in, like whatever.
Yeah, or they serve in such a way that they have influence and they can make the church more about themselves.
Or more about what they want it to be about.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at family, like. Sometimes people's obsession with their family or their idolatry of their family
It's because it's a reflection on them.
Exactly. And then when they go to...
For anyone who says that isn't the case, it is. If your kids are acting a fool out in public, don't let anyone lie to you. We are all looking and saying, you have not disciplined your kids.
Yeah.
Kids are a reflection on their parents.
And just yesterday, there was the sentencing for the two parents of the shooter at the high school here in Michigan, who were found liable for the actions of their son, in part because they exhibited gross negligence when it came to him, like, having a weapon in school and, you know, saying things, threatening things, clearly needing help, and then not providing it for him. But the law has now has precedent that says, parents, you are kind of responsible for what your kids do.
Mitch, we talked about this in my men's Bible study last week, actually, where we have someone who, I think last night he said he has like 26 years in education. He does have his doctorate in education. So, like, he's, if anyone knows how parents affect children, it's him. And I think I don't know how precise this number is, but I think he gave a fairly accurate assessment. Because the reality is, good parents, kids can still go bad. And with bad parents, kids can turn out good. But he said, if parents are good and they're doing their job and they're good parents, and 95% of the time, they're going to be good kids. And bad parents, I think he was more optimistic with that number. He's like, if you have really bad parents, 80% of the time, you're going to have really bad kids. So there is always that potential to either exceed or to break free of your parents' influence. But that's not the norm. That's not the majority of cases. So there's some truth to that reflection thing, but that's all to say, there are people who make their families all about them because it's a reflection of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for parents, that can have a really hard impact on your kids. When you make their life all about you and living vicariously through them, or pushing them to be perfect or to be excellent because it reflects on you, that's really hard for a kid. And if you're really deep in it, you might not care that I say that, but it's worth acknowledging.
Yeah.
So,
I think at this point, we're probably about ready for takeaways. And hopefully this podcast stitches together well.
Hope so. We'll see.
This all makes sense at the end, but...
If next Tuesday there are three mini-episodes, it's because I couldn't figure out a way to stitch them together, which, frankly, would just be laziness on my part, because I know how to stitch different audio clips together. But in any case. Fair.
Anyway, but I think for me, the takeaway that I want to leave here is, like, we judge the Israelites for how easily they turn away from God and toward an idol. But chances are you probably have a golden calf at some point in your life that you've fashioned right under God's nose. And
thank goodness he's not in a smitey mood.
Yes. There is a lot of grace that we've been given in Christ. So if you find that idol, repent. I don't think you have to grind it into dust and put it in your drinking water, but would recommend doing away with it.
Yeah. And I think my takeaway is just to remember that our goal is for every thought, word, and action to be captive to the will of God. And to care for, especially... I don't think you have to analyze every single thing in your life to say, am I making this an idol? Because I don't think everything you have in your life is at risk of that. But to the things that are most important to us, I think it's worth stepping back and saying, am I making this more important than it should be? Am I fearing and loving and trusting in this thing more than I am God? And kind of having that that lens to analyze yourself through. And I mean, and talk to people you trust who are willing to actually tell you hard truths, because they may be able to see something that you have a blind spot to. So,
yeah.
So I guess my takeaway to shorten that is be conscious about the things that are most important to you in life.
Fair enough.
So with that, like the podcast, give us a rating if you listen on a platform that allows that. We are on all the major platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Pandora. We're on all of them. And go ahead and share this with your friends. That's, I think, how we grow. And if you think this is a podcast that is worth kind of getting out there, that's how we do it. We're not paying for advertising. We're not big on self-promotion. But if you think it's worthwhile, share it with your friends and say, hey, I think this is worth your 40 minutes, your 50 minutes a week. So we encourage you to share it if you found it helpful. This would be a weird one to share passive-aggressively with a friend who you think is struggling with an idol. But I guess you could still do that. Hasn't stopped us before. If you have a topic or a guest that you would like us to have on, you can go ahead and message us on Facebook. You can reach out that way. Or if you know us personally, just shoot us a text, send us an email. I guess talk to us in person. But if Ben's anything like me, there's no guarantee I will remember that we had that conversation. So a text or an email gives me something tangible to be like, oh, yeah, I got to do that. As always, brothers and sisters, go in peace and serve the Lord.
Thanks be to God.